Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and with me is one of my favorite friends.
Good evening, Carolyn. This is Richard. Good evening, everyone.
I'm so glad you answered. I love when I introduce him and he actually answers. You know, it gives me a little thrill here. I keep saying one day he's going to hang me out to dry and pretend he's not there.
Would I do that to you?
Uh-huh. Sure you would.
That's true, I would.
Oh, we've got an exciting show this evening, and I really think we do, because this is a remarkable, powerful woman. And it is Queen of Sheba. Many reasons why we are bringing her forth, and we're going to get into some of those. But before we do, I just want to mention something. I got an email the other day, and it was a question. And the question was, basically, you know, you have all these famous people that you connect with. Why don't you just connect with some average Joe that lives next door? And in case any of you are thinking about that out there, I just want to say that the people that we bring forth are people who have had great events happen in their lives. And the purpose of all of this is to learn something, to be in those moments, those exquisite moments in history where exciting things happened, where there might be challenges or dangers, and we can learn from these individuals how to solve problems and bringing forth new information. And in case you think this is something difficult that we do, I want to tell you out there that are listening to us, all of you can do this. You can all talk to individuals on the other side. You can speak to your relatives, for instance, who have passed over. You can talk to the masters. And it seems so outrageous to say this because it seems so impossible. But we are using a method from the right side of the brain. And the educational system and everything we are accustomed to works with the left side of the brain. And most people do not understand or have been even introduced to the magic of the right side of the brain. And we have a class where we teach this to people. And Richard does that class, and I have to say, he is a magnificent teacher about this. And Richard, would you be kind enough to tell those in our audience where it is located on our website if they wish to find out more about this?
Well, it has its own website, and it's called rightbrainmagic.com, amazingly enough.
Well, you know, we try to make things easy for people. And if you have not listened to this show yet, and this is the first time you've come on board, I want to tell you a little bit about what we do. Richard connects to the guest through the right side of his brain, and it is the consciousness, his consciousness, that is communicating with the consciousness of the guest. And you can participate in this if you have an image that comes to your mind of the guest, see it in your third eye, and just gently call quietly the individual's name. And as Richard explains what it feels like, the vibration of the individual, you might feel that also. And so, Richard, I know our dear queen is with us because we've been communicating with her earlier today and other days. And so, would you call her forth, Richard, and explain to people what it feels like when you communicate with her consciousness?
Yes. Well, she is certainly here. She's making her energy very present, as all of our guests do when I go through this little process. They really connect very strongly with me. And how I experience her energy is this beautiful, powerful, clear, love energy. It is, I experience it slightly left of center, if you will, on my physical body, but it is quite broadly spread and has a very clear feminine aspect to it. Very powerful, clear, pure energy. It's just exquisite, really wondrous feeling. And that's about all I would say about it. It has a lot of power to it, it's a beautiful energy, as I say, and it is above all a love energy, just wonderful to experience.
Thank you, Richard. I would like to add to that, she has a powerful energy, but there is this gentleness about her. And as I sense it, she has combined the power of her own person, but it is also the gentleness of the divine feminine that is held within her. And it's a beautiful cooperation between the two.
I would agree with that.
Mm. Yeah, she knew how to be powerful, she knew how to be loving, she knew how to be gentle, and she was, I suspect, a queen whose subjects loved her. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough, I know she has a message for our listeners. If you'd be kind enough to connect with the queen.
Mm-hmm. Let us see what she has to say. My dear friends, I truly appreciate this opportunity to speak to you across what might seem eons of time to you, and yet really I am speaking to you in this moment through this extraordinary opportunity that these two open up for all of us on the other side that they wish to connect with. And I particularly appreciate this opportunity because I wish to take this opportunity to clarify some of the misunderstandings that have grown up about who I was, what I was doing, and, of course, my relationship with that one that you know of as King Solomon. If you have examined the history that is held and written about me, some claim that I was the Queen of Ethiopia. And it is true that my realm, you might say, encompassed Ethiopia and indeed across that narrow strait into that area that is perhaps best known today as Yemen. And indeed, my city where I lived indeed was in Yemen, not in Ethiopia. And in those times, it was a country of great riches, not only in terms of gold, because there was a tremendous amount of gold available in that area, especially in areas of Ethiopia, but also we had tremendous production of great spices. And these were valued and appreciated by so many in that ancient world. And so it was a country of great wealth and, yes, had a connection to Ethiopia. However, truly my home was on the other side of that strait at the mouth of what you know as the Red Sea. And so I firstly wished to clarify this. And I also wish to explain a little of my origin from a soul perspective and indeed my relationship with that one you know of as King Solomon. As other guests have come forth and explained on a number of occasions, there have been three great souls, three great monads that have been responsible for sending forth key aspects to your beautiful planet at key times. These key monads are firstly Alora, the High Cherubim Angel, her counterpart Archangel Sandalphon, and that other great soul that has responsibility for opening and closing the cycles of Brahma, amongst many other things, that being known as Marietta, the one that sent Yeshua forth. And you have heard from many aspects of these beings come forth on this show, and it is no accident from several perspectives that this has been the case. Some of those have mentioned that many great souls that came forth in leadership roles for humanity at key times came from these great monads, and indeed that is true. And there are many that have not come forth in this form, this platform, you might say, that are also aspects of these great souls. And I will also mention that there has been, in a sense, a dance played out upon planet Earth between these great souls as they have gone about living their lives. And so this forms the basis of my connection with King Solomon that is not understood by your historians. King Solomon was an aspect of Alora, the High Cherubim Angel, and I am an aspect of Sandalphon. And as many of you understand, we have journeyed together through many life experiences upon your planet. And indeed, we came together, in a sense, that is, we came at the same time, and we reawakened that deep soul connection that we carried. And so there are many stories told about why it was that I went to Jerusalem to meet with King Solomon. And really, the fundamental basis is that as we awakened our skills and knowledge and understanding and remembered who we were, we remembered that connection. And so it was that connection above all else that had me go to Jerusalem and to connect with Solomon, you might say, in the flesh, in the physical, in this dimension. And so I came bearing great gifts, as has been recorded, because, of course, such gifts were very plentiful in my kingdom. And it was simply the thing one did in those times. And he too prepared great gifts to give to me in return. And there are many stories about me, for example, having cloven feet and the legs of an animal and so on until I met with Solomon and that was cleared. This is simply nonsense that has been recorded by, you might say, the myth makers, those who wish to make something up that has some basis for enrolling people, for tangling them up in religious dogma. It has nothing to do with the truth. We were simply two souls that came to fulfill important leadership roles in that time, and two souls that carried a powerful connection that goes back in truth before the creation of this cosmos. And we simply took the opportunity to connect in this dimension. And it is true that we had a son together and that I raised him alone. Because even though we shared that connection, we also understood that we had come in that lifetime to live for the most part separately, to fulfill our roles independently upon the planet as individuals fulfilling leadership roles in different areas of that area of the world. And so I wanted to clarify some of those understandings. And some of you understand that these two great monads have sent forth aspects when there has been the opportunity of what you consider to be a golden age, the opportunity for a golden age. I will say that this is not the only time that we have come. We have come at many other key times also. And indeed, in that lifetime, it did not represent one of those times where there was the opportunity for a golden age. However, one of the key roles that was being fulfilled was that that temple that Solomon built indeed was on the site of an ancient Atlantean temple that carried important information that had been, you might say, placed there in that temple at the time of Atlantis. And so what is not understood is that the temple in its own way was acting to preserve the underlying Atlantean temple, because it was important that a thread be established that carried that key information, you might say, from the Atlantean time in its own way through to your time. And indeed, the rediscovery of that information was a key role that the first of the Knights Templar that went to Jerusalem were undertaking. They were gathering that key information from that location of where Solomon's temple had been. And so even though that temple was destroyed, in a sense, its presence ensured that the underlying columns that carried carved information in that ancient Atlantean temple were preserved. This might sound a little incongruous, but indeed it was done in a manner that preserved this. And so most believed that the temple that Solomon created was for the sole purpose of housing the Ark of the Covenant. And whilst it certainly performed that role, its primary role was in fact this preservation of the Atlantean information. And so this is something which has not been understood. And part of the reason that I came to Jerusalem rather than Solomon coming to my area of the world was for the two of us to undertake key energetic work which ensured that this information was preserved. Again, we both had aspects present in the time of Atlantis, and part of our role in that time was to ensure that key information flowed down through time over this some 13,000 or so years which separated that time of the fall in Atlantis to your time. And a key aspect of our roles in that lifetime was to undertake some key work to ensure that this information was protected and preserved and would be available and flow down to influence events in your time. So I share some of these underlying, you might say, secrets, because truly it is time for humanity to begin to understand the roles that these three great monads have played upon your planet. As I said, the role that Yeshua fulfilled was a very important one, and he was, as I explained, an aspect of Marietta, and he has explained this himself. And some of you have understood that both his parents and the parents of Mary Magdalene were aspects of Allura and Sandalphon, and indeed Mary Magdalene herself was an aspect of Allura. So you can see how important it was felt that that key time some 2,000 years ago was in that role of preparation that was undertaken to ensure the unfolding of events in your time. So these pieces are important to understand, and above all else, I wanted to, you might say, flush away some of the dogma, some of the nonsense that has been created around my memory, you might say, but also to give you a little better grasp of this underlying plan that has been in place really since before the creation of this planet to ensure that this key date, which is about to be with you, unfolded as it was intended. Great, great planning has gone into this. And for many of you, it is hard to imagine how this could be so. But indeed, there are many threads of this conversation that have not yet been shared with you. And more of these will be shared between now and the end of this year. And the true understanding of all of this will come forth in great abundance beyond ascension, because this understanding is important for humanity. And so these are the key things that I wish to share with you as I come forth and join you tonight. And so it is.
Well, I have to say thank you so very much for this beautiful message, because you answered so many questions that I had prepared to discuss with you. What I would like to do is move on to the Ark of the Covenant. And I would like your thoughts, first of all, to tell us, in your understanding, what the Ark of the Covenant was.
There are perhaps as many distortions about the truth of the Ark of the Covenant as there has been about my life, you might say. This has been deeply misunderstood. Your Bible, if I can call it your Bible, records that the Ark of the Covenant was created to house those tablets upon which ostensibly the Ten Commandments were recorded. And I will say to you that this is not accurate. Indeed, the Ark of the Covenant was created in the time of Atlantis, and it was created by a number of off-planet groups cooperating to create this piece of quite special technology. And it is a technology that has had some of its powers displayed through time, and some of these powers have been recorded in your Bible, individuals interacting with it in an inappropriate manner, simply being killed by it. Its ability, for example, to influence consciousness in your dimension. The stories of, for example, it holding back the waters of the River Jordan is an accurate story. The stories of groups carrying the Ark of the Covenant into battle to give them greater power over their opposition have truth to them. And indeed, it was used by Moses as he navigated that passage across the Red Sea to hold back the waters. Now, I will say to you that this is not as dramatic in that case as your records suggest, because the area was relatively marshy where he was crossing, so the depth of the water was not that great. But it did play a role in this. And secondly, the way that that group were traveling, essentially on foot, was very different from the Egyptian army in chariots and so on, which simply could not navigate though that marshy territory. But the waters did return to make their passage impossible. So there is some basis for some of these stories. But the key reason that that technology known as the Ark of the Covenant was created was actually for your time. It was created for the purpose of assisting with the cleansing of the planet and the preparation for the ascension process that is about to unfold in your near future. Those who prepared this understood the journey that humanity was going to travel and understood the abuses that were likely to be unfolded, you might say, upon your planet, particularly in recent years, where pollution levels of many sorts have been allowed to grow. Pollution of heavy metals, pollution of materials such as plastics and other oil-based materials, pollution from nuclear waste and so on. And it was recognized that in order to clear all of this, humanity, or more particularly those who are responsible for leading this clearing work, would need assistance. And so that piece of technology was created for that purpose. And one of the roles of the Knights Templar was to bring that technology back to Europe and to place it in another dimension where it can be accessed at the appropriate time and activated to assist with that clearing work. And the reason that it was in the hands of the one you know of as Moses is because he indeed was the same individual that your history records as Akhenaten. And some people have begun to recognize this connection and have written about it. And indeed, that is so. And so the Ark was present in ancient Egypt. And if you look at the history, you will see the evidence of this. And so when Akhenaten effectively became Moses and left Egypt, he took that technology with him because he understood it was important to take it from the control of the powerful priest class in Egypt and to take it forth and again take it forth on its path to lead to your time. And so this, my friends, is a little of the truth of what the Ark of the Covenant actually is.
I really appreciate this information. Can you give us some thoughts as to how the Ark got from Atlantis to Egypt?
It is not well understood that there were a number of groups that went forth from Atlantis to various other areas of the world. Indeed, it is more accurate to consider Atlantis as having been a global state of being for humanity. Yes, its focus was in that area of what you call the Atlantic, and there is no accident by these namings. But there were groups elsewhere in the world. And so when it was clear that the fall was going to occur, this unfolding was thoroughly planned and well understood. And it was recognized that it was important for that piece of technology to be placed in an area of the world where it would be safe and could be protected and move on its journey that has unfolded. And so it was transported to Egypt before the fall and remained in Egypt from before the fall through to the time when Akhenaten took it forth to Jerusalem.
I really do appreciate you giving us all this information because so many people are unaware of this. Now, the Knights Templar left France and went to Jerusalem and to King Solomon's Temple in particular. Was their mission, you might say, to retrieve the Ark of the Covenant?
Part of their mission was to retrieve the Ark of the Covenant, that is so. But also part of their mission was to bring forth some level of what you might call enlightenment in that time. They were dark times, as you would understand. We are talking about the 11th century. 12th century. And these were very dark times. And so part of their role was to move the Ark of the Covenant from where it was placed in another dimension in Egypt and bring it through to Europe. What is not understood is that the Ark also played a role in activating the power of that, you might say, initiation path, or indeed you might also consider it to be an ascension path, which was that series of temples down the Nile. And it was recognized that it was time to move that type of path, if you will, from Egypt to Europe. And as you may be aware, the Knights Templar were responsible for building the Gothic cathedrals. And part of what was created with those Gothic cathedrals was, again, an initiation path, and indeed, for those who chose it, an ascension path, passing through a number of those cathedrals. And so the Ark itself played a role in the activation of that path. And so that's part of the reason it was important that they brought that Ark through to Europe and placed it in another dimension so it could play its role in activating this ascension path. And that also is why that path in Egypt lost its power, because the Ark was moved from that area to Europe.
Wow, that's exciting news. Now, the Templars worked with the Ark of the Covenant, and they were instrumental in building the Gothic cathedrals in France. Was the power of the Ark used to help build the cathedrals? And also, did it hold some of that sacred geometric information that was used in the Gothic cathedrals themselves?
The Ark did not play a role in this. The key secrets that were involved with the building of the Gothic cathedrals was part of the information that was hidden on those pillars in the Atlantean temple underneath King Solomon's temple. And so these secrets, which were also known to the Egyptians and indeed used to build the pyramids, were taken forth and formed the basis of the ability to work with stone in the way that they could, to make that stone weightless, to make it soft so it could be carved and so on. This knowledge, this information was stored on those pillars, and it is this information that was the key to being able to build those cathedrals in the way that they were built and in such a short time.
Thank you for clarifying that. There is, you might say, in tradition, that the Ark is being held in Ethiopia in a small church there. Can you give us some insight as to how that idea came about?
The Ark of the Covenant, as you understand, had become a very powerful symbol, you might say, to the Jewish people, to the Hebrew people. And this, as you can begin to understand, was not really based in the truth, but indeed a manipulation of the truth. And whilst it was important to protect it and to house it, it was also important to, for reasons of the nature of the reality on your planet, to have a path by which it might be seen to pass within the known consciousness, you might say. I am searching for words to express this. What I am saying is that there was a replica of the Ark created, and it was this replica which followed the, you might say, somewhat tortuous path via Egypt to Ethiopia. And that replica indeed carries a great deal of power, and to the, what I would term uninitiated, would very readily mistake the replica for the true Ark. And so what was done in that time was a replica was created and was taken to Egypt and hence to Ethiopia. But at the time that the replica was created, the original Ark was returned to Egypt and placed in another dimension so that it was not accessible to humanity. It was protected in this manner, just as quite a deal of information that is important for your time has been placed in another dimension. And I give you another example, and that is Yeshua's own writings, Yeshua's own teachings, which, excuse me, were not recorded in the Bible or indeed anywhere else, because many of them related to this time in which you find yourselves. And so it was placed in another dimension, and the Templars understood this and understood how to access it and to take it back to Europe and again place it in another dimension where it is not readily accessible to humanity in general. And so that Ark, that replica which is in Ethiopia and which in many ways has become just as powerful a symbol in their religious practices, where indeed all of the Christian churches in Ethiopia have this inner sanctum, you might say, that protects what is known within those traditions as the Holy of Holies, carries a replica of the Ark. And for most of these churches, it is a very simplistic replica. And it is fascinating that they have, you might say, extended the tradition of creating replicas, because indeed the one that they are replicating is itself a replica. You might enjoy the irony of this.
I have to say that the information that you are bringing forth is so fascinating, so interesting, that I think our listeners are so wrapped up in awe at what you're saying that they're not calling in with their questions. So I just wanted to take a moment and remind people that we're getting close to the end of this call. If you can imagine, this show has gone so fast. Don't forget to call in. If you have a question, now is the time. So getting back to the Queen of Sheba, I want to follow a bit about the Templars themselves. Now, the story is that we have some Templars that left France and went to Jerusalem at King Solomon's Temple. And I ask you, how did they know to do this?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to create another connection in this long puzzle, because the two key founders of the Knights Templar were once more aspects of Alora and Sandalphon. And that one that your history books record as being the founder, as Hugh de Payen, in fact was an aspect of Alora. And Hugh carried the abilities of being able to communicate with beings on the other side and to communicate with his higher self and so on. And so came to understand his mission and came to understand the importance of going to Jerusalem and collecting this key information to be able to fulfill the broader mission of the Knights Templar. And so, once more, you have a key role, in this case, in a sense, not so public a role, although it was a role of great power that these individuals fulfilled, and indeed came many times to fulfill key roles, key leadership roles within the Templars throughout their history. And so it was those abilities to communicate, just as you two communicate with me, so it was that Hugh was able to do this and brought forth the necessary information and understanding that led to the creation of the Templars and the work that was undertaken by them.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Well, we do have a caller now, Helen from the Bay Area on line one. Helen, yes. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Carolyn and Richard. I was really wrapped around by the fascinating show.
Wasn't it fascinating? Yes.
My gosh. It is amazing.
Everybody wants to know about the Ark of the Covenant and all what had happened and where it was. Yeah.
Yes. And taking notes, I was like, gosh, I feel like, you know, the human history needs to be rewritten or retell the truth based on the underlying spiritual development aspect of it. And but it's very mind-opening. Thank you very much. And thanks to Queen Sheba. And I have I was inspired to ask a personal question. Yeah, but first of all, I want to clarify. And so we are saying King Solomon is actually the one soul aspect of Alora, and Queen Sheba is one soul aspect of Archangel Sandalphon, right? So they existed in opposite sex way, in a way. Alora is more like a female aspect in general, or they are just a no?
In an absolute sense, on that level of consciousness, this distinction is not as you see it expressed in your dimension. And it is true that Alora is more an expression of the feminine than the masculine. However, the two have come forth in various roles, playing both the male and the female in your dimension on many occasions, though it is true that it is more common that Alora has fulfilled the female role and Sandalphon the male. But it is not as simple to say that it has been one way or the other. I already gave you another example, which was Hugh de Payen, the founder of the Templars, who was a male. And indeed, Alora's aspects came forth as male aspects every time in that context, because it was a male order and they were warriors. It was entirely appropriate for it to be so. Even so, the two of them knew who they were always close companions as males together, as warriors together. But I will give you another example, and that is the individual who gave his name, you might say, to Atlantis. That one known as Atlan was an aspect of Alora, a male, and his consort, a female, was an aspect of Sandalphon. So there have been many other examples throughout time, though, as I said, it was more common, has been more common, that it be expressed as Alora in the female role and Sandalphon in the male. It does reflect their predispositions. And indeed, if you track this back to the very highest levels, which extend way beyond this cosmos, indeed, they carry those predispositions to a very high level of consciousness indeed.
Okay.
Thank you, Helen. We appreciate your questions. As always, they're interesting.
Oh, thank you very much. And can I ask a little further that I have long wondered, and what is my soul monad? Or is that proper to ask the name of this soul monad? Or is that not a simple question?
I suggest to you that you simply recognize that you are an incarnated cherubim angel, as you know, that your monad is a cherubim, and to accept that with time you will find this name for yourself. It can be difficult for names to come forth from those higher dimensions into this dimension. Some of these names do come forth to an extent. And, for example, the names that I have been sharing with you, as in Alora, Sandalphon, and Marietta, really do not get expressed in this form in those higher dimensions. You might describe them more as a very complex sound, but it is not a sound which sounds anything like what you might experience in your dimension. However, they have accepted, you might say, the form of this name coming forth in your dimension, because it is important for them to be able to be identified in this dimension in this manner. And some of these names do, you might say, translate relatively easily into your dimension. I will say that your name is a little complex to bring forth in your dimension, and so it is not something I am willing to try and approximate to bring forth for you. But understand that as you pass through the ascension process and you reawaken your own connection to your monad, this understanding will grow within you. It is a question that will be answered for you and for every other being that participates in the ascension process. These connections will be reawakened. So it is not long for you to wait, Helen.
Good. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Helen. We have to move on, dear, because the show is almost over.
Sorry.
And we've got a couple other people that want to talk to the Queen of Shiva. Thank you,
please.
Dear.
Thank you very much. Take care.
On line two, is it Tekla? Do I have that correct?
Yes.
Welcome, Tekla. Yes. And what question do you have?
I'm fascinated by Hassan Menelaus, was he an aspect of Marietta?
I didn't hear. The connection's not real clear, Tekla. You're fascinated by whom?
Menelaus.
Their son.
Hassan.
Menelik.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you understand the question, Richard?
I did.
Thank you.
And it's a great question. Let us see what she says. It is a fine question that you ask because it reflects some understanding of what you might consider to be the dance that has unfolded. And indeed, whenever there has been an attempt at a golden age, it has been that these two have come together to bring forth an aspect of Marietta. And so your question is very well placed. However, as I mentioned, this was not a time that was an attempt at a golden age. We were fulfilling other purposes in this lifetime. And also, I will add a piece to your understanding, and that is, whenever there is an aspect of Marietta brought forth in this way, it is always an aspect of Allura, that is, the mother. And as we have discussed, I am not an aspect of Allura. And so this would not have fitted with this, you might say, agreement that is in place. And so Menelik was not an aspect of Marietta. It is also fair to say that there are many other aspects of Marietta that have come forth from other souls, because it is true that these great beings always have aspects present upon the planet. However, it is not for the purpose of these significant roles. They, you might say, have a finger of consciousness present upon the planet at all times to monitor what is happening and to ensure that they understand what is unfolding. And so there are aspects of Marietta that come forth from other souls also, when they are simply very minor aspects for this monitoring purpose.
Tekla, thank you so much for your question. We must move on because we only have 3 minutes. And
I
there's
just
someone.
Wondered if I knew her.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Did I know her in that life?
The Queen of Sheba?
You were not one that was present with me in that life, Tekla. We did not know each other in that life, though you were incarnated at that time. You were in a different area of the world from where these, you might say, dramas were unfolding.
Thank you, Tekla. We appreciate your questions. As I said, we must move on. We're at the end of the show. I don't know if we have time for this question. Jackie is on line 3. Jackie, welcome. I'm not sure we have enough time. Are you there? Apparently,
I can be very brief.
Yes, quickly, because we have like 1 minute.
Yes. I heard you talking about the Ark of the Covenant, and because Mary, the mother of Jesus, she has been interpreted as being symbolic of the Ark because she is the God-bearer. And because of her interior life that was so deeply centered on God. Can you comment on that?
There is no real connection here. It is simply some of the symbolism which has been implanted in the interpretations, if you will, that have flowed through Christianity. It is, you might say, one of the many examples where the truth of things has been distorted through the lens of those who wished to fashion dogma and structures which would bind humanity to their version of the truth. And so there is no real connection in truth between Mother Mary and the Ark of the Covenant in that sense.
Jackie, thank you for your question, dear. We must move on because the show is at an end. You're welcome, dear. And I'd like to thank in a very special way the Queen of Sheba for being here. Your answers were magnificent. And you, Richard, for bringing her forth. Again, as I've said, we couldn't have a show without you.
Yes, thank you, Carolyn, and thank you to the Queen of Sheba for coming forth. I found it fascinating. You never know where these things are going to go and what's going to come forth. It's quite a lot of fun to do these things.
Quickly, Richard, who's the guest next week?
St. Helena, yes?
Yes, you did.
St. Helena is, for those of you who don't know, is the mother of, what's his
Constantine.
Name? Constantine.
Yes.
The mother of Constantine.
Got some exciting stuff next week.
Truly, truly.
Anyway, thanks again, the two of you, and good night to all.
Good night, everyone.